Today is July 28, 1998. I am Mary Kay Miller Beist, a volunteer interviewer from the Germans from Russia Heritage Collection at the North Dakota State University Libraries in Fargo. It is a pleasure to be here visiting with Sister Mary Daniel in Good Counsel, Mankato, Minnesota. Sister Mary Daniel grew up around the Hague, North Dakota area. Sister, could you give me your chosen name?
Sister Mary Daniel Lainz.
Why did you choose this name?
Because I have a favorite brother that I grew up with, who's right next to me in age, and his name is Daniel, and so I chose Daniel.
Okay, what is your date of birth?
November 7th, 1925.
Where were you born? At home? Was there a midwife that assisted?
I was born at home, and there was a midwife who later became my stepmother.
Can you tell me your nationality?
German from Russia.
And what is your father's name?
Lawrence Lainz.
Would you spell the last name for me?
L-E-I-N-T-Z.
Okay. And how about your mother?
As far as I know, she was born here in America.
Okay. Can you give her name? And
Elizabeth Fisher.
Elizabeth Fisher. Okay. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
8 brothers and 6 sisters.
So you come from a large family. Where are you in the order of birth in the family?
I am the 14th one.
Okay. Were there any other family members or relatives that entered the convent?
Mm-hmm. I had 2 sisters that entered. They're quite a bit older than I am. They were in the upper bracket of the family.
Okay. Discuss tell us about your support that your parents gave you for joining the sisterhood.
My mother was dead even before I was only 8 years old when she died, but my father had lots to do. In fact, he had everything to do with it. On his deathbed, he asked if I would become a sister like my other 2 sisters, and I said, no, never. I never wanted to be a sister.
Did the Holy Scripture and prayer play a lot of, did you have a lot in your home?
Yes, we did. But I don't know, I can't really say that helped me to decide. It was more the wish of my father later on that this came to me.
Okay. Did the pastor influence your decision in any way?
He brought me down and he thought if I'd see the place, I'd change my mind, which I did.
I know this from the part of the tape that we talked before. When you came down for a visit.
I came for a visit just to see my older sister that was working in the diet kitchen here, just to be with her, to get to know her. My other sister was at Mount Mary. This was during the summer. And I came to around the end of August, the beginning of July, I think. That's what it was, because I did enter the 14th of July, not with the other postulants. I entered by myself, alone.
Okay.
With the other candidates that were there, other postulants that were in there.
And what age were you?
I was 15 then.
So you were quite a distance from your family.
Very much so. Okay. Far away.
How did you let your family know that you wanted to join the sisterhood?
Well, I wrote home, which would consist of my stepmother because everyone else was gone, and told her that I wouldn't be back, that I would join the SSNDs.
How many were in your class when you started, when you joined?
There were 13 others, so there are 14 of us.
Did all 14 go through all the stages to become nuns?
Up to final vows.
Up to final vows, okay. What was a typical daily schedule at the convent? What did you do in the morning? What did you do in the afternoon, evenings?
Well, it wasn't too much different than what I grew up with. A lot of discipline, but I had that as a child, as I was growing up. And so we got up, dressed, came down for prayer, morning prayer, which we did at home also. Then we had instructions, scripture, formation, whatever. Dinner, more prayer. You could maybe be by yourself for a bit. I happened to go to the kitchen to work, so I was in the kitchen all day. I don't know what the others did. I was the only one that did home service at that time, because I didn't have any education then. And so I worked in the kitchen, which was my way of spending my day.
Okay.
Which was very heavy at the time, because I was so young yet. And those heavy pots were not easy to lift.
I know when we went down and toured the kitchen, they were saying that they remembered such huge, huge pots.
Roasters were this big, this high. And you lifted those. I mean, you had to. There was nobody else there to do it for you.
How has your communication continued with your parents after you got here? Were you able to communicate a lot?
My parents were dead, so I didn't have anything to communicate.
Okay. How about with your brothers and sisters?
Yes, yes. And they were very, very wonderful. I had a brother who said, "Now, sis, if you don't like it where you are, you can come to my house. This would be your home."
Was he still living around the area where you grew up?
Yes, at that time he was.
Okay. Did you keep in touch with a lot of your friends from back home? You were awfully young when you came in.
No, I did not. I really didn't.
Would you describe the stages of becoming a nun, starting with the postulant?
When I entered, I was young, and they told me I'd be a postulant for 3 years, because I had to be 18. And that was fine with me. I didn't care how long I'd be a postulant, just so I was in at the time. But after 2 years, I was received for various reasons. And so I was a novice for a year. I was 17. No, yeah, 17. So I was 18 when I was professed after a year of novitiate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had 3 years of temporary vows. You took your vows, and you had 3 years of temporary vows, and then 3 years later you took final vows. So that's the formation at that time.
Could you describe to me the final vows ceremony, how it was performed?
I guess the biggest thing I can remember is the pall we were under after we pronounced our vows, and also, I would say, the dress that we changed from white to the black veil, and we also got the thorn crown. You know, in reception, in novitiate, we got the roses, the rose crown. Now we got the thorn crown, showing us that this life, it's not the easiest life in the world, but if you do it for Jesus,
mm-hmm.
He won't be with you. So that was the idea. And then under the pall, we really renounced everything that we had. Like if we had any, monies or anything, you know, that family has given, that was all renounced and handed over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. After you were here, did you, you came in young. What did you do for education? How much schooling did you get here?
Well, I did not. I was not educated right away. I did home service, as I said before.
Mm-hmm.
I did cooking, laundry. I did a lot of house baking. Just many, many things. And then later on, they asked if I would teach. And my older sister said she's not going to teach unless she gets her education. And that's when I started to finished my high school, I had started high school. I finished, took different courses to finish my high school and my college, which took me 17 years, but those 17 years I also taught.
Was your older sister you're referring to, the one of the sisters that was
yes,
here?
She died 3 years ago.
Okay. Where were you first stationed? What was your first assignment after you had your were certified to teach?
St. Peter, Minnesota. I did have 1 year of kindergarten in Worthington, but I kind of discounted that because I didn't like it.
Okay.
But I went to St. Peter, and that's where I had 57 children in first grade. And then I went to, I was there 2 years. I went to St. Agnes in St. Paul for 6 years. Went to, was sent to La Crescent, Minnesota for 2 more years. And then coming back to St. Agnes for 4 more years. Then I took, I didn't do this on the other tape, but it just came to me now. They gave me a year off to study, so I did that. Then I went to Sacred Heart and taught there 10 years. And in between there, I got my certificate, you know, my degree. Mm-hmm. Then I took a sabbatical, and I went to Chattanooga, Mississippi for spiritual renewal. And the other half of the year, I worked up here in healthcare. And then I was sent to Northfield. I was asked if I would like to teach some more, and I did. So I went to Northfield and taught first grade there for 6 years. Then I came up here to do pastoral care work.
Sound like you've been very, very busy. Are there any experiences that you'd like to share that one of those first few years you went out teaching?
Yes, I didn't know how to teach. Nobody ever showed me.
Well, I bet that was a challenge.
It was a challenge, but I just loved it. I just picked everything up, you know, and I
kind
just,
of learned as you
yes.
went along. And
it was surprising because the supervisor, when I was at St. Agnes, said that I needed my credits for student teaching. So I says, fine, come in anytime. You know, I was not a bit afraid because I was going to do just what I always did. And she gave me A+ for student teaching.
Great.
So that was consoling, knowing that I was doing what I was supposed to do. So.
And if you enjoy what you're doing, and
yes.
it reflects on your performance.
So. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay. After school hours, what were some of the activities that you were involved in church and in the community?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, the first 17 years, I studied. That's
right.
All I did. I just had to do that to get my certificate, my credits. So, but otherwise, I'm a walker. I walk at least 3-4 miles every morning. And so I've walked for years and years.
That's great.
I love to do it. And I do crafts. I'm a crocheter. I did a lot of bedspreads and tablecloths and doilies and what have you. So I love to read. I love music, real fine, soft music.
Comforting, kind of
yes,
relaxing.
Right, I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you first came into the convent, you had the
big, stiff veil with a wimple, right.
Okay, and then you went to the
V-shaped one.
All right, after that you got to wear street clothes. How did you feel about that? Was that quite a change for you?
It was a very big change. Even some of my little first graders, when I told them I'd look a little bit different the next day, they didn't want to come to school. I had some calls saying, no, we want our sister. We don't want her to look any different. So that kind of, was a jar to me, you know. But I just kind of put that aside. I thought, I have to live. You know, I can't be doing what somebody else wishes me to do. So I just changed overnight, and I was in street clothes the next day.
So you found out, and then you just decided
that
you were going to make the change right
yes.
away?
And we could do it a period of time, any time, you know. So I just did it, because I knew the change was here, And it seemed to be for the better, because not only us, but many other congregations were doing the same thing, and I knew it was something we needed to do.
Okay. What are some of the biggest changes from when you first came in and joined the sisterhood to now?
I would say the clothes, yes, would be one. Also, I think the change of our rules, that we could be more ourselves of who we are, that a kind of a freedom, you know, not that you could all run around, but you were kind of more free, you weren't held on a leash so much, or supervised, you know, you could live. You know, it was a big change. Also, I would say the liturgy.
Yes.
That was a lift for me, because I didn't like Latin, and I couldn't understand it, and I could never understand why we were doing it. And I had questions in my mind. However, I never said anything, because I knew they couldn't do anything about it. But when the change came, I just went all for it. You know, that was up my alley.
Changing over to the English.
Right.
Okay, sister, I would like to visit with you now about some of your childhood memories. When you were at home, what language was the main language spoken at your house?
German.
German. Can you still speak the language fluently today?
No, not fluently.
Not fluently.
I know a few words, and I can understand them if it's my dialect. And if it isn't my dialect, then I cannot understand it. I couldn't keep a conversation.
Do you think more the High German or the Low German?
Low
German?
Yeah.
What were some of your childhood chores? What were some of the things that you had to do around the house, around the yard?
We had to help with everything that we did, the cooking, get things for Mom. When she made bread, you know, her hands were in the big bowl, big dish, and we you know, helped her. We collected manure for our fuel. And probably, I didn't say this on the other tape, but last night when I was in bed, I thought, I'm going to share this. You know about the cow manure, but the horse manure was a little different, because the boys would collect it and go beyond the farm a little bit and put it there. And after they had quite a bit there, they would take a team of horses and they would trample that down. It was all in a circle. Press it down, and then another layer and another layer. So it became about, I would say, like 5 inches or so, 5 or 6 inches deep. Then they let it dry a little bit. Then they cut it in blocks. And then when it dried a little bit in between, they lifted it up, and that's where we came in. You know, we didn't care if it was on our hands. I mean, this was fuel.
Right.
We were doing. This was important. And so we stood it up so it would dry underneath. And then maybe a week later, we would put it in bigger piles, maybe about this high, to let the air go through some more. It had to be dry all the way through. Then it was put onto like a straw pile, a long straw pile. It was put on there kind of crisscross so the air could get through. And then we had to cover it because of the snowstorms. How to do it? Well, to put straw in a barrel and manure. And you mix it with your hands. And that was my job. And my stepmother didn't think I would ever do that. Well, it made no difference to me because I was collecting manure from little on. So I mixed all that, just like you mix bread, you know, with my hands. And then that was used for a covering for the manure that was spilled on the like a haystack, you know? And it became like clay. There was no way that the wind could go through, or snow or rain. And when we did get the manure and bring it into the house, we had to use a chopper to chop that off, and we just did a little bit at a time so the snow wouldn't get in.
Uh-huh.
Now that was like coal. Like if mother did a lot of baking, then dad said we could use that because it burned longer. It was just like coal. And sometimes he even used it for night, you know, to heat the radiators upstairs. So that's something I wanted to share.
I'm glad you did, because I've never heard that.
You never heard that. A lot of people that I talk to that have asked me about my childhood, and I share that they had never heard of that. They've heard of coal manure.
Yes.
You know, and you stack that up too, you mm-hmm. know, or bring it in. But they never heard of horse manure. And it seems as though when I look back now, that my father didn't want to waste one thing ever, not even that. Like the corn cobs that the pigs, you know, chewed the corn on. The next day, we collected that. That was a chore again. We collected that and burned it. Now, granted, they burned fast, but it still helped us to. We had no wood.
Right.
So you had to use something, you know. So we collected those and brought them in.
So you were kept quite busy.
I was very busy, all day long. And then another thing, we were sent out to kill gophers because they harmed our fields, and we got a penny for a tail.
And I bet there were a lot of gophers. North Dakota seems to have quite a few. Did you help a lot in the house also?
I was kind of small when my mother was living yet. You know, she died when mm-hmm. I was 8 and a half, mm-hmm. so I helped her around the house. But then, a little later, when I was a little older and my mother died and my dad remarried and I had a stepmother, she taught me how to sew, how to cook, how to do many things.
So who did you learn to crochet from?
I learned it by myself.
Learned it on
No one showed me, because I'm left-handed and no one could show me.
Oh.
So I learned just by looking at a book. And now I've taught many others since.
Great. That's great that
yes.
you can pass that on. I know
yes.
my grandmother crocheted.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish I would have had her teach me
yes.
how to do it. And the ones that do it just make it look so easy. I mean, like there's nothing to it.
Mm.
But, yeah, I wish I would have learned. I'd like to talk about where you went to school. Could you tell us where that was?
I went to a country school 3 miles from home. And it was, we had maybe about 10, 11 students at the time that I remember. I went there up to the sixth grade.
And was it a one-room schoolhouse?
Yes.
Where grades, whatever,
all
1
grades.
Through 12?
Right. No, 1 to 8.
1 to 8?
Yes.
Okay. What was the language that was usually spoken there?
German until the teacher caught us. Nobody wanted the English language because we didn't know it. You know, we hardly understood what they were saying.
Was the teacher able to speak German?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
I had never heard her.
What are some of your special memories about your childhood school? Can you think of anything that kind of sticks out in your mind that you can remember?
Yeah, I remember especially my brothers, you know, who went to school with me at the time. I think there were two or three. They always would throw snowballs at us. That was awful. And, you know, they put us into the outhouse, you know, because we needed shelter, because those snowballs were coming at us.
And those can hurt.
And so they were throwing it till they were at the school door. So we always got late. And then we were punished.
What kind of a punishment did you get?
I don't remember that.
Remember.
No. I think it was extra homework. It seems to me that's
okay.
what it was. Extra homework. Because we missed.
What were some of the playground games, recesses? What did you do at those times?
Jacks. We played jacks. We played jump rope. We played catch, tag, Andy Annie over. Just the fun things that they do now.
Some of the things
Some
that they're
the
still
things.
Playing.
We
yes.
had no playground equipment, none whatsoever. That I
no
remember.
Swings,
completely
no.
empty, yes. Just the outhouse, and there I remember one shed And we used to take that for shelter when the boys were after us. But otherwise, there was nothing else but that one room and an outhouse. That was it.
Can you remember anything about your teacher? Does anything come to mind?
I remember a teacher that I had for 4 years, and I just loved her. And we did this. The parents would invite the teacher to the home for the weekend, and every family would take a turn. And if a family said no, then we were glad, because then we could invite her again.
So you got an extra turn.
That was a real joy for me, yeah, to have my teacher in the house. That was great.
So she could just come into your house.
Mm-hmm. And be with us, eat with us.
Eat with you.
Yeah, she had a room by herself, yes, because we had a very big house. We had four bedrooms upstairs. And, yeah.
Quite a treat to have the teacher come to visit you. I'd like to talk now about some of your spiritual upbringing. Was religion and church in education, did that inspire you in a lot of ways? Was it a big inspiration in your family?
It was, yes, but not to inspire me to become a religious, no. But I'm sure, looking back now, if I wouldn't have had that, I'm just wondering if I'd be here, you know? Mm-hmm. We had prayer, morning prayer, evening prayer. We had rosary during Lent, kneeling around the kitchen table and up straight. That was a biggie for my father. And if we weren't, he'd be there right there to remind us. We kneel up straight and fold our hands. We also had scripture reading. We had a book of all saints. And every day he would read a saint, you know, the life of the saints. Also, he received a paper in the mail that was a continuation story. And this was all in German. See, he read in German.
In German.
Yeah, script. He was fluent. None of us were.
Understood it all.
Sure, we understood everything, yes. And I remember, this is a really aside now, when he'd do that, I'd gradually crawl to the radiator, you know, and the boys had their mittens and caps on there, and that looked so soft to me, you know, and all of a sudden I'd be up there on top of the radiator, you know, and then he was busy reading, you know, he didn't see me up there. But I remember that, yeah.
How often did you go to church services, and what was the language spoken at your masses?
I imagine Latin, but then any instructions or anything was all German, yes. We went Sundays, confessions. Otherwise, we didn't go during the week because it's 5 miles. And I guess we were the first that I remember. I don't remember if anybody else having a car.
So you had a car.
Chevy. We had an old Chevy that when I grew up, yeah, that... the boys sometimes used to go out, and we also had a pony, so they could also use the pony to go someplace, you know, in the evening after mm-hmm. their chores.
Okay, let's talk about some holidays. How was Christmas celebrated in your family? What did you do for Christmas? Christmas Day, Christmas Eve?
I don't remember much of that, except the preparation before Christmas. My mother wanted to decorate a little bit with a little fake tree and putting the candles on it, little candles. I couldn't wait to get that lit and just to see that with little gifts around. We also had Saint Nick coming, which was one of my brothers, you know, and then we'd get... Well, it was a riot. It was a riot. We'd all hide under the bed because they were ready to spank us, you know, and that thing, yeah. But that was a big... looking forward to having Saint Nick come. See, we didn't know it was one of my brothers until later on, you know.
Right. Was a lot of baking, good baked goods prepared for the holiday?
Oh, absolutely. Just real. And I remember Dad coming home with a big sack of nuts, and the hardtack candy, that old time candy, was in there. It was a mixture. No chocolates, but it's all hard. And oh, that was such a joy when Mother would go in and get a big bowl full and set it on the kitchen table. That was a treat, I tell you.
Yes.
Yes.
Enjoyed by all, I'm
by
sure.
Everyone, yeah.
What were some of the things that were baked?
Cookies.
Cookies?
Well, of course, bread. Nobody wanted anything but bread because it was so good. Now I can't eat it.
Oh. Did your mother or your stepmother, was baking bread kind of a daily thing?
Yeah, daily, yes.
You said you had a large
yes.
family, so I'm sure.
And so when my mother died, before my dad remarried, I did the baking. I was 8 and a half.
You made the bread?
I made the bread.
Oh, gosh. Every day?
Every day.
How many loaves did you have to make every day?
Oh, about 8 or 9.
Being you had the big family,
uh-huh.
it...
Yeah.
You were busy. What kind of musical entertainment did you have in your home?
We really didn't have any. I don't remember any singing.
No singing.
Until my brother Daniel began to start on the piano, to doodle around on that, and finally he really played something that he had heard. He could do it by rote. And then I used to stand next to him and sing. And then he'd sing with me. That was about the only thing that I remember about music, because there was no radio, no television, except going to church and...
And singing in church?
Singing in church. I belonged to the choir, yeah, from little on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any dancing?
Yes.
Where? Where did you do your dancing?
In the dance hall, just a small dance hall. I didn't want to, but my brother more or less said, yes, you're going. I'm older than you are. So he showed me how, and I'm so appreciative he did, you know, and I loved it.
What are some of the dances that you did or that you learned?
Polkas, most of it, and waltzes, two-step, foxtrot.
Where would you go to these dances when you went?
In the dance hall, right there at Hague.
In Hague.
Yeah, we didn't go out of time.
How often were there dances? How often were you able to go?
Maybe once a month. That's about it.
Was there a large number of people that would come to these dances?
Quite a few, yeah. Even from Strasbourg, I know they came Linton when they heard. And same thing when Linton or Strasbourg would have a dance. You know, the people from Hague would go over in the farming area.
Did you have bands playing?
Yes.
Do you remember any of the names of the bands?
Yeah, the only one I remember is Lawrence Welk. It's the only one I remember. I can just see him sit up on the stage.
Okay.
And I remember one time, now I don't know if this was Lawrence Welk's band or not, I have no recollection, but I was dancing with my brother Daniel, and the pianist got sick. And they said, is there anyone in the audience, in the dance floor, that could play? Nobody went. And so he went. And there I stood. So I went home.
Oh, you went home.
I was too embarrassed.
Didn't have a partner, huh? What kinds of games or puzzles did you play as a child?
I think I mentioned jacks before.
Yep.
Jump rope, a lot of jump rope with my friends, like Sunday afternoons. Playing in the shed where the wheat was, hiding, you know, getting yourself hid, and they'd have to find you under the big piles of it. That was a fun thing. Or in the hayloft, crawling in the hayloft. And I remember a little later on, we had bales of hay, you know, so it was fun just to play tag in there or to hide from someone.
How about playing cards?
Very much so, yes. But see, I was too little. I just stood and watched.
Uh-huh.
Like, played Pro Frank, whatever that is. I don't remember it anymore. We played whist, which I still play. But those are the only two games that I remember that they played.
Was it usually with family members, mm-hmm. or did friends come over?
Friends came over.
Played cards? And
my parents would go some night, mm-hmm. and play with them.
Were you allowed to go along?
No, never. We were glad because we could make candy.
Oh.
And this is another good thing to share, I think, would be mother would come home, and I remember one time my brother Jake and I, we had the fudge. Yeah, we were, somebody else had the taffy and somebody else had divinity. So Jake and I had the fudge, but we heard the car come in before the fudge was finished. So he ran it downstairs. He says, he said, we can eat it tomorrow, Mother. So he took it downstairs, and so the next day, I would gradually come to the kitchen, you know, get a spoon, hit it behind me, ran downstairs, and I had fudge. I had to scoop it in. Then later on, Jake would do the same thing. And then we'd tell the others, you know, if you take a spoon, tap downstairs, you can have some fudge. And so we kept doing. And finally, I guess my mother got tired of that. She said, I'm just wondering how good it tastes.
Oh.
As though Mother didn't know. I said to her, I remember saying to her, Mom, how did you know? She said, I looked at the sugar bag.
She could tell there was sugar missing.
Absolutely.
So she caught on to your little key. Do you recall any home remedies or cures?
The only one that I recall is liniment that my father would sip. He'd heat it with some water, and he had asthma. So I would just think that it felt good to on his throat. That's why some of the family members used to say he should never do that. That's too strong. But yet, he just didn't sit there and drink and drink. He just took a little bit at a time. And at that time, I didn't know what, I just smelled it, but I didn't know what it was for. Another thing is my mother had headaches very badly, and she used to steam some water and let that steam go on her face and head to relieve it. I don't know if it did or not, but she couldn't stand the pain. But those are the only two remedies that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would like you to tell me about your First Communion. I think you had a really good story to share about that. So would you tell me about that, please?
I do not recall that I was excited about my dress or veil or shoes or rosary or whatever. The big excitement was the wreath of roses that my sister received, and we talked about that previously, when she became a novice. That's what we got to wear for 3 days. We could wear it. And she had sent it home, and my mother framed it. And I used to ask her what that was. Well, I didn't understand. I couldn't understand it. And then when it was my communion year, she said, if I'm a good girl, that she would take that out and I could wear that for my First Holy Communion. Well, I tell you, I was the best child in the whole farming area, because I wanted to wear that, because I just loved it. It was light pink and it had pretty flowers on. Oh, it was so beautiful. And so that was the biggest thrill, and that I could wear it for communion. Another time I could wear it was for Corpus Christi. The children could dress up their first communion time, and Mother said I could wear it again. So for a number of years I could wear it for Corpus Christi, which was real wonderful for me.
Is that the time that you made the flowers?
Yes.
Out of the crepe paper?
Right.
Would you tell us about that?
Mother had a beautiful basket, and she decorated with crepe paper, fringes on. It was just so beautiful. I can just see it. And then my job was to cut all those papers for flowers. And so I'd fill it with that. And then when it was time to process out of church and to line up, the girls, the communicants, the boys too, the little boys and the little girls, they would line up like two rows. You'd have a partner with their baskets in that right in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And then the two front ones would come and strew flowers on the ground all the way down, genuflect, and go in back of the line. That was so beautiful. And a lot of that color that I saw was in my crown, you know, my crown of roses. And I just thought I really matched. And I was so proud to do this. It was a real thrill.
So it was something that you really enjoyed doing, and seemed to have many good memories about. Okay, sister, are there any other thoughts or observations, stories, anything you could remember yet that you would like to share with us? Things that you think we'd like to know about you or about your background, your home life, your life here at Mankato?
There's so many things, but, you know, unless someone asks the question, you can't recall, you know. So I don't know what else I could share. There are many more things. Like, I had quite a social life before I came, so I felt that I didn't need it. I didn't need that, that I wanted something different. I wanted to give my total self to God.
So you felt you had the opportunity to visit with friends,
right,
visit with family, go out to these dances,
right,
that you were ready to do something
right
new, and this is
right
come to the sisterhood is what
that's
you chose.
Right.
And
that's right.
You seem
and I never doubted it, even though I was very young.
Yes.
You know, and I...
And you came about it in such an unusual way, just coming to visit.
And then to stay.
And then ending up staying.
And not knowing that I would be accepted. I just presumed that I'd go in and be done with it. You know, I didn't know. And I was. And I remember Mother Annunziata was the superior. And I remember kneeling in front of her and saying, Mother, because that's what everybody said.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know why they called her Mother. She wasn't my mother.
Right.
But I did it because I heard somebody else say it. I want to be a sister now. I remember saying, now. And she said, oh, are you sure? I don't think you're ready yet. Now, I kept saying.
And you were.
I wanted it now.
You were young, very young.
I was only 15, and that's why she kept probing me and saying, are you sure, you know? But see, those words that my father said on his deathbed came back and kept saying, you must be a sister, you must be a sister. And that really stuck with me. You know, I tried to put it away,
mm-hmm,
but it didn't work. See, I kept saying, I'm never going to be a sister. But see, it kept coming, and to me, it was God's call. I see it as a call from God, direct.
Did you have any of these feelings for this calling while you were at home?
Never. Oh my, no. And my two sisters came home when my mother died. In
mm-hmm
fact, they were home quite a while because she was in a coma, and they could stay until she either died or did well. So they were home quite a while. And that's the first time I had ever seen them. And I thought, oh, they look awful. I'd never want to dress like that.
Did they have the black?
The big one, yes. And so, and the next time they came home, they were still in that big one, when my father
the black
got
habit
sick.
Yep.
And that's the only time I had ever seen them. So I really never lived with either of them.
Until you were up here, then you got to know them
that's
a little
right
bit better.
That's
because
right
you said they were so much older that when
that's
you were
right
at home, you didn't really have a lot of communication, and they left, I'm sure, home before you really got to know them.
Only the communication, and you could only write so often, you know, Christmas and Easter, that was it. So we never heard much from them at all. So.
And when they joined, they weren't allowed a lot of home visits. I think it was when the mother died and the father died.
That was it. And then when I entered, I was told that I could never go home because my parents were dead. Even though I had a stepmother, I couldn't go home for her because she was not my real mom. So I was told that, and yet it made no difference. And when I was postulant, when I had just entered, Sister Irma, who died 3 years ago, she was at Mount Mary, and she did not know that I was on the hill. And then I entered, and she still didn't know. She had no idea.
She
thought I was home. And she only had seen me twice. And so when she came in, they told her not to, they told the sisters, the authority told the sisters not to tell Sister Irma, let her find out for herself. Well, somebody did, and she was pretty angry. She came up to the postulancy, and she took me in her room. She hardly greeted me. She just, what are you doing here? And And I said, I'm going to be a sister like you. No big deal, you know? Mm-hmm. And she says, who cut your hair? See, I had never had my hair cut before when I came to enter. It was real long.
Long hair.
And wavy and blonde. And that's what she remembered. She said, who cut that hair? And I said, well, Sister Mary, she said I had to have it cut. I says, who cares? It didn't bother me just because I have a haircut. She was just not too nice to me, I thought then. However, looking back, she was just trying me. I'm sure she was elated. I know she was elated that to think her little sister is joining the convent. You're not going to fool me with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes. I says, no matter what you're going to say, you know, whoever you are, I'm going to be a sister. I'm in. So you can't do anything about me. You know, I'm here. I'm here to stay.
Right.
And so she was okay.
She was okay with it then after
yes.
she had tested you.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
passed the test, evidently.
Oh, and you know, here's another little story with Sister Casta, the older one, who is older than Sister Irma, just by a year and a half. They were next to each other in age. She had to come home to take care of me when I was born. And she told me after I was in the postulancy, she says, now I can tell you. I says, what are you going to tell me? She said, when you were born and I had to come home and stay home a year to take care of you, I promised the Blessed Mother to pray the rosary, the 15 decades of the rosary, it's a novena, every day that you become a sister.
Her prayers were answered. Sister, could you tell me the name of the chosen names of your two sisters that were here in the sisterhood?
Sister, the older one was Adelheid, and she didn't choose. She got the name Sister Casta.
Oh, she didn't get to choose her name.
She did not, and she hated it ever after. It was a relic of a saint that was put in the day before in the altar in mm-hmm. our chapel. And so they just automatically gave it out to the next person in line, and she happened to be the next person. Casta, who likes that? Sister Irma, her name was Margaret, which was a...